And welcome back to Extra Feature. I have a fabulous guest who I just love having on. Russell Kring, new film, Girl in the Palms. Where do you find it? You didn't tell me.
You can find it on, it's on Vudu, it's on Apple Plus, and it's on Prime.
Guys, you got to see his films. I love them. He's one of my favorite guests. So welcome back.
Wow. Hey, well, hey, I am thrilled to be back. That's the thing about this business. It's a small business. So any opportunity, you know, we have to like support each other. You have a great podcast, and I'm very, very excited to talk about movies again because that's my life, man.
Well, mine too. I watch way too many. So did you write this one again with your wife?
I did. This particular movie has a weird sort of the coming together of this film was basically I just lost the money for another movie. Okay, literally on the day that this movie started, I just lost like a $25,000 check that basically someone was going to give me to shoot this movie. And instead, because basically they were like, look, if you don't get the more money to make the movie, I'm going to have to take my check back. So I was in a depression, okay? And I was kind of like, you know, because getting the money is hard enough. So when you lose the money, you know, you just, you know, double to your temple.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was looking through Facebook, and I saw a painting. The thing is, I didn't even know it was a painting. All it was it was just a picture. And the picture, it was called Girl in the Palms. And it had this very kind of Florida, tropical, you know, the colors, they reminded me of like a Duran Duran album, like that artist, Nagal, you know, from like Miami Vice and things like that, right? And I was basically, I was just like, God, you know what I'd like to do, Tracy? I'd like to make this movie. Whatever this movie is, I'd like to make it. So I looked up the name Girl in the Palms, never been used before. So I thought, well, first of all, it's a great name. Okay. And then I was like, what would a movie called Girl in the Palms be? So we reverse engineered this whole thing based on this painting, you know, about this beautiful woman, the tropical colors, the, you know, the palm trees, where obviously the film is going to be shot in like Florida. And that's how the film started. And we were writing the film almost as we were shooting the film. Some of it was written first, but probably half the film ended up being written as we were going.
Okay. So let's start right at the beginning. You have snow in your film. You're not in Florida for snow.
That happened later on. We shot the film in this. There's this great period of time that I've discovered, which is right after Thanksgiving and before like December 18th. Okay, because a lot of films don't shoot then because they would go all the way through Christmas. And, you know, when you're doing something and it's only taking like, you know, 13 days or something like that, there's a really nice hole that you can grab people that, you know, are just kind of like, hey, you know, maybe I could go do something and, you know, be able to buy my kid some Lego sets, you know. And so when we did the thing at the very, very beginning, that was probably about 2 months later when we were up here. You know, and when you see the movie, sort of the fact that the difference between the snow and the winter up there and, you know, down in Key West is actually very important to the plot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's get the beginning. Was this based on somebody, like, I could even say, I know you told me it's based on a painting,
mm-hmm.
but to me it was based on maybe somebody you met. Literally just somebody you casually met at a party, you could have made a whole film off this.
You know, I think that really the really idea of this movie was that all of the interesting people that you sort of come across, just the characters that you come across in life. And when somebody explains to you, this is what happened to me, you know, and you're like, oh my God, how did you get through that? And to them, that's just part of their life. So, you know, the character of Luna to me is very sort of representative of, you know, people that experience, you know, tragedy, people who have traumatic things that happen to them and the way that they self-heal.
So this is a self-healing movie. So that's what
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I think so. She is kind of her own therapist in this film, or she finds people to be her therapist.
Yes, that I could give you. I think she's looking for something. I don't know if she ever, I hate to ruin it, finds it. That's going to be up to you at the end.
That's the thing. Yes.
That's a personal choice by the end.
Isn't it really the journey? You know, it's not really the destination. And one of the interesting things about the film is that she is, there's this sort of artifice always to her at the beginning, like through the film, you know, she wears all these wigs and she has all this makeup and everything is sort of about an image. And then that slowly gets stripped away once she finally gets to her mother. And we actually get to see the real her.
Yes. Okay. So when you're shooting, do you slip in slow motion in the scarf tossing scene?
The scarf tossing scene.
It's right at the beginning. You have a woman tossing her scarf. You can see her walking.
I think there is. Yeah, there definitely are some very artistic choices and some very much, I would call them music video quality.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
To some of the movie. Yeah, it is. I mean, I feel like one of the things I was talking to my wife about this, and I said, this is probably the closest thing I'm ever going to be to making a David Lynch movie, you know,
true.
You know, it's just, there are things in it that are just like, well, that's just weird to be weird. You know, that's just like, you know, David Lynch has the log lady and I have the weird fire guy, you know, or the weird art guy with the car or whatever, you know, there are just these things in it. But yes, I have no doubt that there's slow motion, there's back motion, there's every kind of motion you can think of.
Okay. So did you ever think of maybe just as a shorts? Like, I really felt I was watching short films.
Interesting.
An overlocking art. Because, I mean, you really could take each part of this film and make it a short without a problem.
No, absolutely. And I think But see, you could say the same thing about like the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just like, okay, well, visiting the Cyclops. Okay. That's, you know, that's a short. Or, you know, what happens, you know, to, with the suitors. That's a short. You know, I like the idea of a road movie. Another movie that we really were, emulating was like, you know, something like My Own Private Idaho, or what's the one where she has the giant thumbs? My wife just said, what was it, babe? Even Cowgirls Get the Blues.
That's it. Thank you. It's been so long since I've seen that.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, these are oddball little films where, you know, you're going from, you know, kind of place to place and experience to experience. And some of the experiences are positive and some of them are like a little bit weird and negative. I wanted to avoid any sort of like real darkness because I think that's what everybody is expecting. You know, everybody is expecting. And of course she gets beat up and raped. It's like, you know, something like that. I'm like, no, that's not really reality. You know, you're more likely to meet a weird pirate guy than you are, you know, to be assaulted.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
But I think
they would have worked just as well as shorts. You're absolutely right.
But I think your film at least the first short, I really felt something was going to happen until I started getting into it. I'm like, okay, I know where he's going now. But I didn't know that in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah,
so I think you kind of set it up to go either way.
You're talking about with Tara Rule. Okay, so Tara, yes. That was fun. That was really funny because that was the last thing that we shot and the last thing that we wrote. Because we did not have an opening really to the film. We had the idea of like the snow and all this type of thing. And we knew we wanted her to like wake up and it needed to be like she's going the wrong direction. But we wanted that sort of that tension, that Hitcher quality to it where you're in the passenger seat in a situation where what am I going to do? You know, what are you going to do? Jump out of the car? You know, I mean, it's one of those things that I think a lot of people have been in the situation when they're driving and they want to be anywhere but where they are. Mm-hmm. And so that was actually one of the things that the Film Threat said in the review was that they thought that they were going to be seeing a different movie.
So did I.
They were seeing.
I will back them up because so did I.
A little bait and switch there, yeah.
So did you give your lead actress directions for that? Did you say we want you to be a little more crazy than you want to?
Oh, well, yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
Tara worked with my wife, and they were both cinematographers on the film. But I'd worked with her before, and she's an actress, and she's really, really great at improvisation. Tracy and I wrote a scene, like we wanted the whole weird thing about like the stuffed bear and all this type of stuff for her to play with. But and it was interesting to direct it because I was in the car behind them and she had her phone on so I could hear it. But I really didn't get to see it. And I remember telling her, okay, that was great, but I really want you to scare the living shit out of her. Okay.
Yes.
I want you to be a crazy person. And she absolutely nailed it. Tara Rule, moving to Los Angeles, grab her while you can. She's going to be a star.
So you're in the car behind it. How did you film the scene then? There's nobody filming the front. You're just using a camera,
well,
the dash.
Well, depending upon the angle. Like if you're shooting, let's say you're shooting back at the front of the car.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then in that case, I would have been in front of them.
Right. Okay. Like, that's
right.
But
when they're shooting, you know, like. We're shooting the passenger or we're shooting the driver, I can be in the car behind and listen.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I told him that, Tracy.
I don't know why Tracy doesn't join us.
I don't know why Tracy just doesn't show up.
And she does come in every once in a while.
Yeah, just come in. Yeah. Just mention. Yeah. We were using this thing. It's called a Cinesquid. And it basically, you put the camera on it and it's got the suction cups and you can put the camera pretty much anywhere. It's just because it's just a little DSLR camera.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
That's right. You knew where I was going eventually.
Yeah.
So let's move on to part two.
I'm going to call it
part two just
because. Part two. Well, there you go. Yes.
I mean, it is the next continuation of the story. Right. Where did you find this guy?
Oh, Charlie. Awesome. Charlie is awesome. I loved. Okay. So, in creating this movie, one of the things what we did is okay. We know we're in Florida. That's okay. So we're going to go from the middle of Florida all the way down. Okay, who do we know in Florida? Okay, so it starts with that, and then the other thing that I did was I thought about okay, who would be great on camera. Then I did interviews with them. So there's an almost documentary quality to this film because the people are basically playing themselves. Okay. They're playing character versions of themselves.
Oh, okay.
So Charlie is a vagabond. Charlie is a pirate. Charlie did, have a very, very colorful past. So when Charlie would tell me stories, like he told me the story of the oatmeal and the apple juice and things like that, I was like, okay, that goes in the movie. When we worked with Monique Parent, who is the was a very, very successful, very famous erotic actress from the 90s. When I talked to her about her experiences, she would say, yeah, and sometimes people would be very inappropriate with what they would say to me. And I was like, yeah, I might have spent 20 minutes of that movie with my clothes off, but I spent the other 70 acting my ass off. And I was like, okay, that goes in the movie. So, you know, it really had to do, it was almost like it was being co-written with everybody at the same time. But yeah, I met Charlie on another project. I always felt like if Charlie could be Charlie on screen, people would fall in love with him, because I've fallen in love with him. I think he's such an interesting and fascinating and funny and jovial and congenial character. And I thought, let's just get that on the screen and people are going to, you know, and the thing is that when you look at Charlie, people are like, well, you know, maybe something bad's going to happen because he's all tatted up and he's, you know, kind of this bohemian and, you know, what's going to happen with that? And I didn't want anything to happen. I just wanted him to be almost like a magical character, just like a lot of the characters in this.
I think I kind of took it at this point. Once I got through that first opening scene, when mm-hmm. I didn't know what was going on, I don't know if this is going to be an insult to you or not. I thought I was watching Wizard of Oz. That I was following Dorothy, meeting
Perfect.
People.
Perfect.
Okay, because that's
Perfect.
The way I took this guy. This is the Tin Man.
Wizard of Oz, Alice in Wonderland, yes. any of those are yes. absolutely what we had.
Okay.
Yes.
And I took that in the second part. I'm like, okay, I got to take this as that. So I'm going to now know this is a comedy.
I really resist the idea of, okay, I'm writing a comedy.
No.
You know, I really do, because it's just like, well, then it has to be funny. If people know they're going to watch something and it's supposed to be funny, it better be fucking funny.
No, I thought it was funny. I enjoyed it. Once I gave up that first second,
right.
I thought it was a horror movie. I kind of clicked in for the second time. I'm like, I get where he's going now. I'm in.
Right.
But it's just the opening. So his outfit, is this his own outfit?
What, Charlie's clothes?
Yes.
Some of them were, though we did when we went to that store where there was like they played the drums and they listened to the music and all that type of thing. We did buy him that really cool shirt.
Okay.
We bought him that shirt and also the green dress that she wears later on. We also bought that there. So.
I gotta bring. I hate to ruin this part, but the flaming sword scene.
I know. It's crazy.
People have to see the movie to understand the flaming sword scene.
Dude,
but
no,
he really did that.
Thing. Oh yeah. No, but here's the thing. You contact people like he was a friend of Charlie's. Okay, and he's like, oh, and by the way, I do a whole flaming sword thing. Okay, so now as the writer, you're just like, well, how can I incorporate? Yeah. This flaming sword into here. There were actually a lot more of things like that in the movie, but people just didn't show up.
Oh. You know?
So there was like a lady, she was going to do silks and, you know, things like that. And, you know, that stuff just didn't end up happening. But the thing is, it's just like, okay, so when she's walking through this crazy place, it's called Warlocks. It's like a hippie commune. In the middle of in the middle of Florida, and that's where they had the peacocks and the cats and the mm-hmm. statues and everything. And I was just like, well, it would make sense. Then we'll have this guy almost like something from the Neverending Story, who's like, you know, explaining kind of like where her path is going to go, you know, because I find it very, very interesting. I've met people who are like, you know, I own 5 mermaid tails, you know, and they're really into being mermaids. Okay. And they spend $500 on each mermaid tail. And that's kind of like those kind of people. And I thought that would be really interesting to bring those out in the film.
Oh, you did a great job. I'm just trying to find my notes here on something.
Yeah,
oh, the, That's
Charlie's, bro. That now, what happened was we were at Warlocks, okay? And this is actually, I think, one of the most I'm super, super proud of this, because we were at Warlocks, and then he was supposed to bring his van to Warlocks, except it wouldn't move. The van was stuck. So what we did was we found the lights that looked like the place at Warlocks, and then we put them in Charlie's backyard where his van would not move. And that's and so it made it feel like it was still in the same place. But yes, that is his van, and it still is not moving.
Okay. We have a quick cut of a guitar playing. Is it lighting or color correction?
I think it is a color correction. Yeah, yeah.
But, you knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the chains are off on a movie like this. Do things actually make sense? No.
Oh, yes, they did. Yes, they did.
Okay, well, you know, it's just, you know, so you may end up talking about the psychic village, but it was just like, that was just something that I found out about it, that it existed. And I was like, well, let's just get it in here. Let's put it in the film, because the thing about Florida is that it is this like haves and have nots. And it's almost like a place where, you know, those that are, it's the island of misfit toys. Okay. True. It's like people from the rest of the country, they move there because of the weather and because of sort of the Wild West quality of being able to pretty much do whatever they want to do. So they can be a Charlie in the box.
True. You're very
actually
correct.
And hey, that's true. And his name is Charlie. So there you go. He is a Charlie in the box.
You know, I can't let that back flip in the pool go.
Oh yeah. Well, he told me he could do it. So it's just like, okay, do it.
Like, how many times did you film it? You just did it the first take? That's
oh,
it?
Oh no. I think he did it. I think he did it like two or three times. I just like the idea that he basically gets her to come to an Airbnb, do all of his work for him. And all he does is swim.
Yes, that's all he does.
But you know, she does get to get on the boat. So that's and he was also a friend of Charlie's. And so it was like then when I got there, he was like, yeah, but I'm not going to take it out sailing. The water's not very good, so it'll just have to sit there. And you just go with that. It's like, okay, fine. And honestly, it didn't make any difference. You know, I didn't need to have the boat sailing. All I needed was the visual quality of it.
So when you're filming the boat location, did you use a drone or two boats? Because it does move.
There is a drone that it is being used for some of the shots. But there was also like going out to the boat. That's just me with my phone. Shooting her going out to the boat, and then we also were, you know, on the boat, and that's very much the music video quality of the film, is that, you know, you take these. I found some incredible artists and music in this movie, and I really wanted to
we'll get there.
Yeah, I really wanted to highlight.
We're gonna get there.
I know, and I think that when you have a movie that almost has a quality of like a moving painting at times, you know, where it's just like really a visual feast, the right music is so incredibly important.
Okay. Since you're ahead of me on the music,
that's fine. No.
Let's go back to music.
Okay, sure.
Constant yes. Music. I love movies that play with your music.
I do.
They don't give you the same thing all the time. So talk about the music.
I'm right with you. I've been criticized for my movies having too much music. And okay. I feel like once you have music and imagery and drama together, that is cinema. Okay. When you remove one of those elements, then you really, there has to be a purpose. There has to be a reason for it. Okay. So I found like just these incredible artists, especially I think Charlotte Lee, I believe is her name, who has a voice. I mean, her voice sounds like Adele. I mean, she's just incredible. And she like does, I think like three or four songs in it. To me, you know, the film, it's a celebration of life, you know, but it's also a celebration of art. So music and sort of the, you know, the visual quality of lighting and things like that all really play into the surreal nature, you know, of it. Because if, you know, if you don't have enough money to do like a Tim Burton, you know, Alice in Wonderland type of thing, then you Tim Burton your music, you know, you Tim Burton, you know, the visuals that, you know, you can actually can do on this low a budget.
So I do want to touch on the actress changing hair every scene. I do have notes about that.
Yes.
I mean, the last one's a pink wig, but I want to know, was it supposed to set what, how she feels?
Yeah, I think No. I really do. When I met Lupe, I found her on Instagram, and she did these incredible like transformations and kind of cosplays and the hairs and the makeup and all this type of stuff. And that was really incredibly interesting. And my wife and I were thinking, okay, well, let's just bring that to the character. You know, let's bring the fact that, you know, she's always trying to kind of hide herself, you know, by, you know, instead of like shrieking away like a violet, you know, she wants to be a firework, you know, and all people really are seeing is the hair, you know, and they're going to make their own assumptions about that. And so eventually she doesn't have any wig on. Eventually she doesn't really have any makeup on, because that finally, she's finally comfortable enough to reveal, you know, the real her. I know that's pretentious, but, you know, what are you going to do?
No, I think you're right. I think you put that out in the movie. I don't think it'd be pretentious in any way. So we get her last location. There's a couple I want to go over. Was that an Airbnb or somebody's apartment?
Oh, with her mother?
Yes.
Oh, man, that was a trip, dude. Okay, so we had rented a Airbnb to shoot in, and basically it started to be like an issue where we weren't able to like the signals from the microphones were getting interfered with, and it started to be a real issue. Plus there were a bunch of things that were wrong in the Airbnb, like the stove didn't work and the bathroom had a hole in it, and it was a huge mess, right? And basically we just had, you know, we went through this debate of, okay, do we try to go find another Airbnb? Do we try to do this? Do we try to do that? My brother was able to come and figure out the issue with the interference, because there was like an incredibly powerful microwave antenna that was like literally right there on the property that we were not aware of. But basically we just kind of persevered through it. But here I have my, you know, my biggest name actress, Monique Parent. I've flown her in from Los Angeles to be in this film. And it kind of is like, that day was kind of like a clusterfuck. And it was, and it's that situation that anyone has ever made a film has felt, which is I am right now embarrassing myself. You know, and everything is falling apart. And are we actually even going to be able to do this? You know, and could this have happened on a worse day? No, but we persevered through it. And I couldn't be happier, but it was touch and go there for a bit.
Okay. So we're hanging out with her mom. We're at the Airbnb. Things are going great. I do have a question. Is it real beer you're pouring? Because it does look like real beer to me.
I think that was one of the things that Monique insisted on. Is she said that, you know, anytime that we're going to be drinking wine or beer or anything like that, she wanted the real thing.
Now, is that a normal thing you would let happen, or do you don't care?
Oh, dude, please, man. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
No. My set, you know, whatever gets people, you know, where they need to be, you know, it, a movie should feel like summer camp, you know?
Okay.
And if people don't, you know, fuck the wrong people or smoke pot or, you know, get killed by Jason, what was the point of it? You know, so just, you know, find a way to enjoy yourself.
So I do have to ask, it's my last big question about the movie. Why the Forrest Gump book?
Oh, that thing. Oh, yeah. Well, see, that was my my friend JB. He is a great friend of mine. He was also one of the producers on the film. And that story about Forrest and Nathan Bedford Forrest is an autobiographical story, is that there was a street that I lived very close to when I lived in Nashville, Tennessee, that was named after Nathan Bedford Forrest, the Civil War general who was also the founder of the KKK. I tried to get the name of the street changed. I got a bunch of, angry, shit from people when I did it. So we thought that would be an interesting thing to kind of throw in the film, with the fact that this guy is, you know, he's making a lot of assumptions. He's basically being a misogynist, and she has to call him out on his shit.
Yeah, sorry, I apologize. I flipped over my page. I have more notes for you, so you're going to have to stay here longer. I have
no, that's fine, man.
I just realized I'm a whole lot of
not
questions.
It is not a problem to talk about my movies, my friend.
That's good. Was it a real burger or a vegan burger?
That actually had to be a vegan burger, because Lupe, the other character that she plays, Luna, is a vegan. So there were some weird things in the film that had to be realistic. Like, for example, when we did the psychic reading in the psychic village, the only way that they would let us do it was if there was no script. They said that they had to do an actual reading of the actress.
That's
and then we would use whatever we wanted to of that.
So next question, where is Plaza Mexico? Where is
that? Oh, I mean, it's right in the middle of Florida. Very close. Hey Tracy, where is that Plaza Mexico at? It's like, what's the name of that town where the horse ranch is? Winter Haven.
Thank you.
Winter Haven, Florida, which is very well known for raising horses and that type of thing. And Plaza del Mexico is just this crazy, you know, like a Walmart where you can get clothes and food and whatever, you know. And we had a friend who knew the owner, and so we got to play around in there, and it was a whole lot of fun. Plus, they have great tacos.
Good to hear. Whose horse?
There was a whole other set of people that she was supposed to meet at the horse ranch, as Sally and Nando del Castillo, and her mother owns the horse ranch, and they were stuck in New York. There was a blizzard, so they couldn't get down. So we had to reinvent the whole horse ranch scene to basically just be Lupe and Mialina, and just kind of like, and stuff like that happens, and you just have to like, okay, we're going to go with it. But it's the second I went to that horse ranch and visited my friends, I was like, I've got to shoot something here. because it's just gorgeous. It's amazing.
Hey, red car on road, was it always color red or did you change the color?
No, no. The red car was always the red car. It's my car and it always will be my car.
And green lights on the car?
Yeah. I mean, we just, you know, we wanted to add that kind of that, you know, one of the interesting things about this movie, you know, is that there's sort of Christmas hangs over the whole thing. You know, that this is Christmas in Florida, and Christmas in Florida is weird. It's strange. You know, you've seen the pictures where you'll have like Christmas lights on a palm tree and it looks like it's ejaculating. Yeah, that's Christmas in Florida.
So true. Hotel location. Dying.
The hotel, you know, one of the things that you can do is if you let the hotel know, you know, hey, you know, we're going to be shooting something here. It's not porn. You know, that's the first thing you got to say. It's not porn. Then, you know, as long as you're paying for the room, they, you know, you can shoot at certain places. And I like to find places that have a lot of character. You know, you think of something like a movie like True Romance or, these sort of like 90s indie films all have these great hotels that have like, oh, wow, I don't know if I'd really want to stay there, but it looks like it might be fun to stay there.
Okay. I'm pretty much done, but I do want to discuss the lead actor. I mean, yes. It's so important in the film to find the right actor that works. Right. So why this actor?
You know, there was just something so sort of sweet and innocent about her. What I loved about her was that she was so open and she wanted to do really, really well. And she wanted to exude something. So I felt, and on a film, you know, films can be therapy for you when you make them. And she was like going through some stuff and dealing with some stuff. And she has said that, you know, she kind of had a cleansing experience in making the movie. The other character played by Mia Lina, who is the horse inseminator that she meets,
yes,
on the road, the horse inseminator. She also kind of has that experience. We actually all were such big fans of making that movie that we all have.
Oh, here we go. The big reveal.
We have palm tree tattoos.
You do. I can see it. That's awesome.
Yeah. We got those when we did the film festival in Orlando. And, the scene where Mia Lina, you know, the other thing about that is that there are really two mothers in the film. There's her mother who she has to really work out with, you know, work things out with and kind of come to kind of a realization of, okay, this is the way I grew up, you know, and am I going to continue to blame somebody for the way I grew up or am I going to find a way to have a relationship with her? But the chosen mother, in that situation is, you know, Mia Lina's character. And I find that very, very interesting, the way that we can actually become closer to our chosen family than to our blood family.
Okay, now it's time for some fun questions.
They've all been fun. Don't sell the stuff short.
These are questions.
They're all fun.
Okay, since you've been on the show before, we got to make up some new ones.
Oh, okay, I'm ready.
Made up new ones in a while, so...
I didn't even realize I'd been on the show before.
I did. As soon as I saw you, I remembered you. Your favorite animal when you go to the zoo?
Oh, wow. That is a really fun question. I would say that I really think that things like monitor lizards or any kind of like Gila monster or things like that are so unusual and weird. Mm-hmm. And you really have the sense that, oh, wow, this is like a little baby dinosaur. So going to the reptile, exhibit and seeing that is extremely cool.
Okay. Walmart or Target and your favorite thing to buy at your favorite, which one do you go to?
Well, generally speaking, Walmart is where we get a lot of our groceries. We like order them and then we get them. Target, as the cool people call it. Target.
Yes, we do up here. That's all the cool people. Yes.
Has some great graphic t-shirts, and I do enjoy looking through their graphic t-shirts and, buying something, kind of crazy and funky.
Last question. Last thing you bought at a dollar store.
Oh, here's the thing. Well, first of all, dollar stores are no longer dollar stores.
I know they're $1.25.
They're $1.25 stores, and they may be going up to $1.50 stores. But yeah. That's all right. I accept that. That's the nature of capitalism. But I went through a period of time, and almost every single film I've ever worked on started with a trip to the dollar store.
Yeah.
Sometime like the day before we shoot, I'm like, okay, we got to go to the dollar store and we got to buy some plastic plates, or maybe we've got to buy, something for the background of the shot, or maybe we've got to do this. So actually the dollar store is a great place to just get all of that stupid stuff that you didn't think about before you started shooting.
I can believe that. Okay. I'm almost done, people. I promise. This guy is awesome. See his films. Check out his other interviews.
I'm so sick of him. Yes.
No. Okay. Tell everybody where they can find your stuff.
This particular film is on it's on a Vudu, it's on Apple Plus, which is very, very cool to be on Apple Plus, and it's on Prime. And what happens is these things, they kind of run a gamut, and so maybe, by the time this comes out, maybe it'll be on another streamer. If you just put in Girl in the Palms and you see this really beautiful poster, with a pink Lupe on it and a palm tree, you'll know you found the right film.
Hold on. You have other great films too. I can't let you go.
Oh, there are six films currently streaming.
And we've talked about two of them.
Yes. Yes. We've talked about two of them. Yes. And I have enough. And we have another one that's going to be coming out later on this year that we also shot in Florida a couple of years ago. It was right before the pandemic. It was called Wheelies Inc., Wheelies Incorporated. And it's about basically, it's like a mystery and bicycling and teen, and it's a comedy and an adventure. And yeah, that was a lot of fun to shoot.
Well, thank you for your time and have a great day.
Of course. Hey man, thanks so much. It's always great to be on Extra Features. And I'll remember that I was on next time, I promise.
It's fine. Goodbye.